Hey guys, I want you to get an opportunity to hear an episode of Tragedy of Cinema. This one's actually on Gremlins, and Kyle and Jimbo will be with us at our live event in Indianapolis on July 16th. So this will give you kind of an idea of what they do if you haven't had a chance to check their show out. If you like what you hear, make sure you go subscribe to Tragedy of Cinema and give them a 5-star liking. But trust me when I tell you, they break down movies in so many different ways that you will know everything there is to know about this movie by the time it's over. So go ahead and give them a listen and see what you think. And then come out in Indianapolis July 16th and catch them live with us and Middle Aged and Creeped Out. You can get tickets at hillbillyhorrorstories.com.
Just as a disclaimer, we want you to know that some of the movies that we will be reviewing were shot in a different time and era where people of race and sex were not treated equally. We understand this and hope you do too. The movies or anything that happened on the sets are not the views of this podcast or what this show is intended to be all about.
Exactly. And we want to give due diligence in presenting the movie and not the views of the cast or directors or anyone involved. But we also feel it's necessary to let the audience know some of the background information to get a feel for what was happening at the time of shooting the film. Again, we hope you understand that we do not agree with everything that went on, and we just want to give out the information. And with that being said, hope you enjoy the show.
Steven Spielberg presents Gremlins. Billy Pelser has a nice home.
Billy, is that you?
Yeah, Mom, it's me.
A nice job. A nice girl.
If you're not doing anything this Thursday night, maybe you'd like to go out on a date with me?
I'd love to.
And loving parents who are about to give him...
You're gonna like this. No, don't shake it. We're gonna have to open it now. Won't wait till Christmas.
The most unusual gift he ever got.
What is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney, be a good dog. My dad gave it to me.
But there are a few things to keep in mind. If you expose it to the light, you may hurt it. If you get it wet, it will multiply.
All that from water? They got wet?
Yeah, plain water.
And most important, no matter how much they beg, never, never let them eat after midnight, because when they do, they change.
Rafe.
They become clever, mischievous.
What's going on here?
And dangerous.
Gremlins, huh? Little monsters.
Right.
Hundreds of them.
Well, I don't know, maybe thousands.
They've been here too. Billy, what are these things? Where do they come from?
Look, I know it sounds crazy, I know. But in a few hours, you're gonna have a major disaster on your hands.
Gremlins, directed by Joe Dante. They'll be expecting you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Tragedy of Cinema podcast. I'm your host, Jimbo, and joined again by one half of the one half.
Your co-host, Kyle, for the moment.
Kyle is here today.
Yay!
Terrence is still under the weather, so Kyle's rolling with me today. Mm-hmm. Today, we got a fun movie to talk about, episode 89. We would talk about Gremlins.
A classic in practical effects.
Kyle, let's go ahead and start the... I got two questions for you. Number one.
Okay.
Is Gremlins a Christmas movie? And number two,
ooh,
which gremlin would you be in this movie?
Which gremlin would I be
in this gremlin you would be in this movie, but I just want to see if we come up with the same conclusion.
You know, all gremlins love fried chicken, so I know which one I'd be. Any gremlin eats fried chicken. But the first question is, I consider it largely a Christmas movie. Christmas happens during it, and it's there's a lot of Christmas in the story time.
And actually, Gizmo was a Christmas present.
Gizmo was a Christmas present, so I think it fully qualifies as a Christmas movie. I don't know if you want to watch it with your little kids, but you'll be all right. And I can't remember the names of some of the characters. I mean, maybe Mogwai, maybe, or one of them. Not Stripe. No, maybe not.
No, the Gremlin. Not the Mogwai, the Gremlins.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so Stripes, maybe. I don't know, maybe Stripe.
No. That's who you would want to be. You would be the one that's hanging from the ceiling fan. The
ceiling fan.
Either that or the one that's over there and he's chewing on the streetlight things and makes it all green. I can see you doing something evil like that. So.
Living the dream. Living the dream. That's where I always want to be, Jimbo. Just eating can wires.
So, Kyle.
Yes.
Since Terrence isn't here, take it away for him.
Okay. We have Gremlins released in, let's see, to get the release date right here, the official release date, getting all even more specific. In 1984, it came out in the theaters on June 8th. And had a re-release next year, August 30th, 1985. Awesome. So, Gremlins came out then. It was directed by good old Joe Dante. Written by Chris Columbus. Composer was Jerry Goldsmith. And cinematographer was John Hora. Budget for the movie was $11 million. Worth approximately today about $29.5 million. Opening weekend, it grossed just $12.5 million, and with inflation, that'd be equivalent to about $33.5 million. But luckily, gross worldwide, it made over $153.6 million, which would be equivalent to $412 million today.
That's a lot of cha-ching, guys.
Big money, big money. No Emmy stuff.
I love that show.
quick little plot summary. Miniature green monsters tear through the small town of Kingston Falls. Hijinks ensue as a mild-mannered bank teller releases these hideous toonies after gaining a new pet and violating two of the simple rules. No water, no food after midnight, and no bright light. Hilarious mayhem destruction in town straight out of Norman Rockwell, so when a watch scene blows up your TV, go to those on the fritz before you call their repairman, or turn all the lights, look under all the beds, because you never can tell. There may just be a gremlin in your house.
You know what? I think I break every single one of those rules every day. I eat after midnight.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
I hardly go outside in sunlight.
Yeah, we are both living gremlins. Absolutely. Let's see here. Some technical details of the movie. It has a runtime of 106 minutes. Its sound mix is 70 millimeters, 6-track. It's a color movie. Aspect ratio is 1.85:1. A camera is a Aeroflex 35mm lens and a Panavision PSR R200. Film length is 2,912 meters. And wrestling on papers. And the printed format was 35mm Easton 5384.
And that's, I do believe, if I remember in my notes, I think this is the last time it was shot, the last film shot on that Eastman
camera.
Right.
Yeah, so it's in a little process there of going from old to new for the time being. Next up, we have Terrence's favorite part. Unfortunately, he can't be here today. And we have the Drumroll Awards. All right. Following through to the first awards, we have the 2020 Online Film and Television Association giving it the award for Film Hall of Fame.
Wow.
Yeah, congratulations. So it's already just securing a place even recently in history. Then next up, we have the 2012 International Film Music Critic Awards for the best archival release of an existing score. It had a remastered soundtrack just released back in, I believe, 2012. Next up, we have the Academy Science Fiction and Fantasy and Horror Films in the US of A. It was nominated for a Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actor. It won the Best Supporting Actress Reward for Polly Holiday. Then we have nominated for Best Makeup to Greg LaCava. Then it won Best Music by Jerry Goldsmith. Best Director by Joe Dante. Best Horror Film. Nominated for Best Writing for Christopher Columbus. Won Best Special Effects for Chris Wales, obviously. And nominated for Best Performance by a Younger Actor, Corey Feldman. Next up, we have the 1985 Golden Screen in Germany Awards, where it won the Golden Screen Award. Next up, we have 1985's Young Artist Awards, where it won Best Family Motion Picture in the Adventure Genre. And that is the awards for Gremlins. Then moving on to my main course meal of every single... My main course meal of every podcast, where I get to devour my words and lose all sense of speech. We have the cast of Gremlins. First up, we have Zach Gilligan playing Billy Peltzer. He could be recognized in movies such as Waxwork in 1988, Mortal Passion in 1989, and All Tied Up in 1993. Then we have Phoebe Gates playing...
Phoebe. Do you have a phobia of Phoebe?
Phobia of Phoebe. We all do, everybody. Phoebe Gates.
No, playing Phoebe Cates.
Phoebe... Jimbo, do you want to cast?
All right. Phoebe Cates
playing Kate Berenger.
You know, they just alienated a whole bunch of the 80s people that watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Sorry, world. I tried. Of course, you must recognize her from the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High, released in 1982. Paradise, really also released in 1982. Drop Dead Fred in 1991. And Private School in 1983. Next up, we have Howie Mandel playing the voice of Gizmo. I was so close to saying he played Gizmo. He's just in the suit. Bright light. But unfortunately not. The voice of Gizmo. Howie Mandel, of course, most popular for his TV show host stuff, where he hosts the show Deal or No Deal and America's Got Talent. And he also appeared in the 1989 film Little Monsters.
Oh, wow. Forgot about that one.
Mm-hmm. Next up, we have Corey Feldman playing Pete Fontaine. He can recognize such films as The Lost Boys in 1987, Boo. Stand By Me in 1986,
Not impressed.
The Goonies in 1985, and of course, the legendary 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Legendary. I like how you put that. Of all those movies you named, Legendary exactly. Turtles.
Not Stand By Me, TMNT. That's where it's out, baby. Next up, we have Hoyt Axton playing Randall Peltzer. He was in such films as Christmas Comes to Willow Creek in 1987, Buried Alive in 1990, and We're No Angels in 1989. Then next up, we have Dick Miller playing Murray Futterman, or Mr. Futterman, as he's constantly called in the film. Legendary actor in his own light, or a bit-time actor. He was in The Terminator in 1984, The Burbs in 1989, and The Howling in 1981, and finally Small Soldiers in 1998. Going forward, we have Key Luke playing Mr. Wing. Key Luke was most known for playing Lee Chan, the number one son in the Charlie Chan film series, and the original Kato in the Green Hornet series. The original of those TV serials, or movie serials, I believe they were called back in the day. So, Key Luke, legendary actor his own right there, especially for Asian American actors. Next up, we have Frank Welker, who voices Stripe, Mogwai, and additional Gremlin voices. Ralph, he also known for playing Ralph in the Animaniacs. Fred in the Scooby-Doo series for most of the roles. And basically, if you watch any cartoons in the past 50 years, then you've likely heard this man's voice. So, Frank Welker, legendary voice actor in his own right. Yeah. You know, just literally hundreds of roles. So, dude's a legend in his own right. Next up, we have Frances Lee McCain playing Lynn Peltzer. She was in films such as Scandal in a Small Town in 1988, The War Widow in 76, Leap of Faith in 1988, and Footloose in 1984. Classic Kevin Bacon. And finally, we have Judge Reynolds playing Gerald Hopkins. Best known for appearances films as Beverly Hills Cops 1 through 3, The Santa Claus Trilogy, Ruthless People in 86, and Stripes in 1981. And that is the cast of Gremlins.
Now, there's one cast member I think that you failed to mention that I thought did a really good job in this movie, and that's the lady that was going to take the dog.
Cut off
his head. She's like, there's things I can do this time. Mm-hmm. She also has the famous scene where she gets in her Stairmaster, I guess you call it, and sits in it, and the gremlins shoot it out the window. Yeah.
So. See here if I mention that real quick. Miss Ann. I believe it was Anderson, I believe, if I remember correctly. Mrs. Harris. Belinda Malasky played Mrs. Harris from The Howling in 1981. There we go. I have that one somewhere.
Great role she played. I thought it was very Wicked Witch of the West.
All right, Jimbo, take it away.
Are you done? You out of breath?
I'm out of breath. I got phlegm. I don't know. What's the word? Phlegm? No, sure. Mucus.
If you've ever watched Gremlins, then you might be surprised that the set for Kingston Falls is the same one used for what movie? Back to the Future in 1985.
Really?
Both movies were filmed on the Universal Studios backlot. And actually, I do believe later on in the notes we'll see that the theater that they blow up is the same theater that Marty...
almost drove into. Okay. Yeah. Or did he drive into? Did he drive into when he came back in
time?
I
think it was like...
I think he did.
One of them, yeah.
When he came back in the first movie, he ran to the theater, if I remember correctly, with his car.
According to the original script or whatever, Stripe and Gizmo were going to be the exact same character. So basically... Oh, yeah. But they turned it down because they didn't want people to fall in love with Gizmo and all this.
And then see him become an evil monster.
They figured by putting in two different things, you know what I mean? Because they wanted Gizmo to be the hero and have a bad guy. And they didn't think kids would really react well to seeing that.
Yeah. So. This is an odd film, too, for how much, you know, it goes so hardcore in the violence route, but also still wanting to be a comedy. Kid movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I still love it to death, but it's very odd.
This movie and also Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom from 1984 are credited with inspiring the MPAA to make the PG-13 rating. Because there's some stuff in this movie, I don't know how I say it a PG, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In Cantonese, Mogwai means devil, demon, or gremlin. The Mandarin pronunciation is Mogwai. Zach Galligan recounted an interview that when this movie was made, there was no CGI, so all of the gremlins are actually animatronics.
Yeah, practical effects all the way.
Each one costing between $30,000 and $40,000 a piece. There's a lot of gremlins out there.
Yeah, so you're just thinking how much of that $14 million budget was just the gremlin effects.
So when all the cast,
the majority of it,
when all the cast and crew left for the day, security had to make sure everybody opened up their trunks of their cars so they didn't steal. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I want one for in here, you know, just a life-size animatronic gremlin.
I bet they sell those things somewhere.
Yeah, go ahead, Kyle, give me one. That'd be great.
I gotta get a gremlin Funko Pop.
And this might be the craziest fact of all, but they were originally gonna have a monkey play the gremlins. But the monkey panicked when they put the gremlin mask head on him.
Like, this is not okay.
And he went and tore the guy's office up, and he defecated everywhere. So the guy's like, nah. He's like, well, I guess animatronics it is then.
We can't use this monkey. He's a gremlin.
Oh, man.
Yeah. One fact later on, just the original mythology of gremlins actually existing in Egyptian mythology is somewhat of a real thing. And actually, they made a horror film kind of recently called Shadow in the Clouds. Basically, kind of a similar concept of World War II fighter planes actually being destroyed from the inside by gremlins infesting inside the machine.
Oh, no.
Really, actually, pretty good movie. I liked it. I just recently saw it. We're like, very depiction, because that's a very CGI-heavy, monstrous animal just... Yeah.
At least one of Phoebe Case's screams, or as Kyle likes to say, Phoebe, Case's screams at the scene at Dory's Tavern is genuine. An enormous cockroach crawled out in front of her during one of the takes. Oh, man.
Gosh.
This, you know why this film didn't do so well at the box office, or not as good? It was released on the same day as Ghostbusters.
Yeah, you can't beat Ghostbusters.
So, I mean, what a great year for movies, 1984.
Oh, yeah, 1984, I think.
Me and Kyle were talking about this earlier. There's a lot of sci-fi throwbacks in this movie. When Randall Peltzer is on the phone with his wife attending the convention, if you look closely, the time machine prop from the
Time
Machine movie in 1960 is in the background, and then
the robot from the Forbidden Planet, what was his name?
But then also, when you look back, the time machine has disappeared. So keep it true to his homage. It just, we don't know if it went back to the future, or into the past, whatever.
Like, secretly, like, his dad is like responsible for all the terrible things in the world. They should, when they made Gremlins 2, they shouldn't have made it about his son. They should have made it about the dad causing another travesty.
Actually, I think that lady's name was Mrs. Deagle.
Was it Mrs. Deagle?
Yeah.
Oh,
because
okay.
She's the richest lady in town, and all of her cats' names are after different kinds of currency. She had Kopeck, Ruble, Peso, Drachma, and Dollar Bill.
Let's see if I can find that real quick. I probably just miscast it then. Whoops, my bad.
It wouldn't be the podcast without at least one.
Yeah. I got to pull. Oh, Mrs. Deagle, played by Polly Holiday. There we go.
There you go.
You got it right. There we go. Okay. I almost pulled Terrence.
The director of this movie, Joe Dante, actually prefers Gremlins 2, The New Batch, over this movie, which is a great movie, too. I crack up on that.
Same time, that you couldn't possibly enjoy Gremlins 2 without first seeing Gremlins 1, I think.
If
you
just
And Gremlins 2 is also great.
It's really over the top, Gremlins 2 is.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's got Hulk Hogan in it, for crying out loud. Yeah, you cut off the movie. Sorry.
I think it's like, that's probably like the first sequel I remember like just making fun of the idea of sequels.
Right.
You know, yeah.
I mean, you got the lady gremlin in there, remember? Mm-hmm. Then you have the
electric one that's
like,
gremlin, the spider one that's gremlin. Like
the spider. Yeah,
yeah, great movie. Great effects in that whole film. Yeah, really impressive stuff.
Near the beginning of the movie, Randall Petzer makes his way to the curio shop in Chinatown. A wrecked car is seen with the hood up and smoke coming out of it. That car is an AMC Gremlin.
Mm.
In real life, the AMC Gremlin logo located on the gas cab bore a striking resemblance to the gremlins featured in this movie, except for a more grotesque reptilian appearance.
Ah, that's classy.
The gizmo puppets were frustrating because they were smaller and thus broke down more. Consequently, to satisfy the crew, a scene was included in which the gremlins hang Gizmo on a wall and throw darts at him. This was included on a list that the crew created known to them as the horrible things to do to Gizmo list.
Oh, that inspires me. That inspires me. Jimbo, I have a question for you.
Uh-oh.
If we didn't have Gizmo and the gremlins, would we have a Grogu in The Mandalorian today?
Sure, because it's Yoda.
Well, you know, but I mean, a miniaturized, even smaller puppet, a real puppet.
Yoda.
Yeah. You think we would have had it today if we didn't have, if gremlins didn't exist at all, if they even never tried to get a little puppet that small?
Yeah.
Because they made him adorable. Oh my God. You know, I think Gizmo is the precursor to Grogu.
Okay. Would you rather have a Gizmo or Grogu as a pet?
Oh. Grogu actually has the Force.
Yeah, but Gizmo could drive a battery-operated Barbie car fresh out of the package with no batteries in it. Does he have the Force, too?
Yeah, you know, but also, like, you know, as much as furry animals are great, they also shed a lot. You know, I don't think Grogu's going to shed, you know, so...
There's not a lot of rules with him except... Grogu, except don't touch that.
You can feed Grogu at midnight. It's not a big deal.
He can't stop me from eating. Remember that one episode where he's eating the lady's eggs?
If you get Grogu, you probably get that little pod that floats around everywhere. You could probably take the little pod.
Grogu, bring me a water.
Okay, exactly. Grogu, give me a beer.
Wow. This is derailed real quick.
Possibilities. Endless.
In the bar scene, the video game that the gremlin is playing is Star Wars from 1983. Mm-hmm. During one night shoot, problems with the gremlin puppets were so severe that the entire cast fell asleep on the set during the delay.
Wow.
I mean, that has to be a problem. I don't know if you're old enough to remember this, but the animatronics back when Showbiz was in, before it became was Chuck E. Cheese, it was Showbiz, and like Billy Bob was up there, you know, and the ape and all of his, I can't remember the name of his band.
And miscreants on, yeah.
They were all animatronics, but I can't imagine working with them so long that they break down all the time. Now, this is a scene I wish they would have kept in here. The original script contained a scene where the gremlins attacked a McDonald's eating the customers instead of the burgers. Hey, I'm loving it. This is the funniest thing ever.
Yeah, there's like another version, like an alternate universe of this film that goes even so much darker, just full R-rated.
Well, it was supposed
nonsense.
To be darker.
Yeah. But even goes like, he just goes full like... Like, imagine, like, the Rick and Morty creators made the Gremlins movie now or something like that. All the animatronics just eating people alive and butchering to death. Like, hilariously and, like, incredibly dark humor, but still fun.
Zach Galligan was the first to point out that the don't feed after midnight rule is silly. Why do you think he said that?
Well, obviously, got to figure in, like, he knows about time zones, so he's going to make fun of that.
It's midnight somewhere.
It's midnight everywhere. What does that mean? Like, does that mean when the moon's up or something like that? It makes no sense. And Gremlins 2 made, like,
that's what I said.
The director makes fun of all those rules.
The director said we made fun of it in Gremlins 2 anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a ridiculous rule, but still a fun one. And plus, the Gremlins are magical. They're fine. You can do what you want with them.
Hoyt Axon is actually said to have improvised nearly all of his lines, even though he stayed to the basic concept outline of the movie.
We need this for the scene. Do we want?
Yeah, and this, like I said earlier, the last movie to be shot on Eastman Color 125T film stock, which was discontinued shortly after this movie finished filming.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons for the no bright lights rule was why? Do you know?
Was it a filming consideration or was it just a...
filming? Yeah, because working with animatronics, they can hide some stuff. You know what I mean?
In the puppets. Good point, yeah.
So being in the dark, they could camouflage some of that stuff.
True of a lot of CG.
Dante did the same thing with tricky and lumpy practical effects for The Howling in 1981, 3 years earlier. They kept the monsters in the dark there to hide some of the special effects problems, too.
And it's true of, like, even, like, well, CG early on, too, like, Steven, like, the Jurassic Park, having him in it, having the T-Rex in a dark environment disguised how kind of, like, how low res those practical, those actual digital effects were. And still true today, a lot of films are afraid to have brightly lit CG characters. Yeah, so.
Along with Howie Mandel and Frank Welker, some of the other voices of the Gremlins were done by Michael Winslow.
Michael Winslow, I didn't see that in my casting. Dun, dun, dun. Notes. I should do more research. Yeah. Always can do more research. Every movie is a book.
This is very interesting, too. Frances Lee McClain, who played Billy's mother in this, Lynn,
yes,
also played Lorraine's mother, Stella, in Back to the Future.
Yeah, she did. She did.
Yep, when he goes back in 1955. Yeah. So yeah, they funny. Were both executive produced by Steven Spielberg. When Billy leads Pete up to the room to show him the Mogwai, a rolled-up movie poster for The Twilight Zone, the movie, can be seen standing on end against the wall. Director Joe Dante and executive producer Steven Spielberg directed segments of that movie. So it's a nice... I like how they always throw in those little things.
Yeah, and unfortunately, don't get many of those scenes today. It'd be more fun to see posters of other movies in movies today. Like, you know, like Marvel does occasionally do star references in their movies, but still, you know, you don't see enough of them. Really. Right. I want to see the dumb posters on the wall.
This is the fourth biggest grossing film of 1984. Gizmo was the inspiration for, I'm sure, one of Kyle's childhood toys, the Furby. It was a multi-million dollar selling mechanical stuffed animal in the late 90s. Did you have a Furby, Kyle?
No. I never had a Furby. Never did. No. I never really cared for them. I thought they
looked... Did you have a Tagachi or whatever the things were?
Tamagotchi? Yeah. No, I never had a Tamagotchi either. I always liked Lego stuff, like the Bionicles, and they made Rock'em Sock'em Robot toys there, yeah, too, where you could take them apart and put them together in new configurations. I always loved those kind of toys.
If you pay close attention on the Deagle real estate sign, the hours of operation are only 10:30 to 11:15 Monday through Friday. That is like my kind of work.
That's my kind of schedule right there.
But I guess when you're the richest lady in town, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When the filmmakers were making this, they had the idea to use Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs from 1937 as a movie to be shown in the theater because Disney released it on December 21st, 1937 as a holiday movie event since the story took place during the Christmas season.
Excellent. Another reason why it kind of fits more in the Christmas scene.
The new Mogwai, which popped out of Gizmo's body as small furry balls, which then started to grow. Wow, that did read right.
That did not come out
they
right.
They were actually balloons.
Tell me more about Gizmo's small
they were
furry
actually
balls.
Balloons and air bladders that were expanded. Wow, let's just skip that fact. That was terrible. Why is there always one fact I say that Kyle just takes it to the 10th degree?
Wow. All right. That's a fun fact.
Fun fact.
Sorry.
Phoebe Cates, as Kyle says, Phoebe, says kissing Zach Galligan was like kissing your brother. And Galligan blames a set visit from Steven Spielberg for making him feel nervous.
Sweet
as I recall,
Alabama.
As I recall, his main concern was to make sure Gizmo was in the shot, says director Joe Dante. But how would you like... Phoebe Cates, one of the most beautiful actresses, says, just like kissing your brother. How do you feel as a Billy? Like, really?
It's even worse than a friend zone, really. Yeah.
Thanks. The movie references Joe Dante's The Howling with a smiley face image on the refrigerator door.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe you didn't give the cast for the dog Mushroom. The dog actor who played Billy's dog Barney,
that's a great name,
also played Lance Hendrickson's dog in the cult horror movie Pumpkinhead in 1988.
That's a great name for a dog, Mushroom.
Alright, these two were considered for the role of Billy. Tell me yes or no. Judd Nelson.
Yes, I can see it.
Emilio Estevez.
Absolutely.
Emilio.
That'd be so good. It's a different movie, but a movie I want to see.
Yeah, then Gizmo come out with some of the other Gizmo for balls that didn't eat after midnight. They'd be like the Young Guns.
So good.
When Phoebe Cates, as Kyle likes to say, Phoebe,
yeah,
asked the explosive guy how big the explosion would be, he said, well, we've packed it pretty good. Cates thought, what does that mean? She went on to reel, in the event, it was deafening, and the heat was so intense, I thought I had cinched my eyebrows. It blew the doors off the theater, as you can see in the film, and it shattered windows on a building at Universal a mile away.
Yeah.
You would think, be like, oh, we're going to blow this up. Let's get the actors out of there.
No.
No. Phoebe Cates, as Kyle likes to say,
Phobie.
Parents gave her a moped to ride around during production, but they took it back after she had numerous crashes on set.
Fantastic.
The Scottish alternative, living her best life, really. The Scottish alternative rock band Mogwai takes their name from this movie. The coloring of Gizmo includes the white patch of fur around the right eye was directly modeled after one of Steven Spielberg's dogs.
Aw, it's adorable.
This is the final theatrical movie of Scott Brady, who played Sheriff Frank. Director John Dante wondered what happened to little John Louis, who played the shop owner's grandson, and he often spoke about wanting to become a director. He became an MD instead. So that little kid became an MD.
Yeah, I remember looking at his casting. He didn't have much on the cast line, so I left him off. But I didn't know he had much more story afterwards, because it's like, oh, he did a good job there. You know, especially, like, you know.
Zach Galligan blamed the film's hairstylist for his embarrassing pre-Kirk Cameron look.
Yeah, it was definitely, that is.
All right. The marquee outside the movie theater, okay? The titles on the theater marquee are actually an in-joke for the producer, Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that.
Boy's Life was the working title for E.T., and Watch the Skies was the working title for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Director Joe Dante said, I think we did this mainly so that when Steven saw the dailies, he would be happy. Mm-hmm. So it was probably a surprise to him. He didn't know.
Yeah, probably delighted to see that.
Can you imagine? I'd probably just crack up.
There's a lot of in jokes in this movie, specifically just from the producers just having fun with each other. You know.
This is something I didn't know either, that Corey Feldman was actually added to this movie when Steven Spielberg dropped his character from E.T. I didn't know he was supposed to be in E.T.
Oh, wow.
In both stories, he is the best friend of the boy who has the creature.
Cool.
Can you imagine him in E.T.? That'd be great,
That would be, a little bit different. Still the same, though, I think. Like, it makes sense to me.
Phoebe Cates, as Kyle likes to call her.
Phoebe.
Does not recall auditioning with Zach Galligan. So not only did she say it was like kissing her brother, she don't even remember
him. Just walking in the room. Oh, that's just a random guy. Whatever. Yeah. And just goes back to living in her own world.
I don't even know who this
doesn't
guy
even
is.
Acknowledge his existence. She's awesome. I love her.
Well, then might want to learn how to pronounce her name. The two swords hanging on Pelter's wall appear to be the same props used in the climatic battle between Buffy, Sarah Michelle Gellar, and Angel, David Boreanaz, in the season 2 finale of Buffy the Vampire Slayer in 1997.
Mm-hmm.
The swelling newborn Mogwai were simply our air bladders, like I said.
Yes,
so I don't want to go back there again. They did say they were blown up like furry balloons by puppeteers under the table.
Furry balloons, yeah. Don't Google that, folks.
The gremlin exploding in the microwave, which is personally one of my favorite shots of the movie, actually had to be shot after the first gremlin explosion was deemed too gory. It was pretty gory to begin with.
What was the more gory version of that?
I don't know, but when she throws his mom, Billy's mom was hardcore, dude.
She went on a killing spree.
Put the one in the blender.
I know. Yeah, the mixing bowl thing and the microwave.
I read that there was a scene, you know, the one that she stabs one of them or something with a knife. And I think when she throws the one in the microwave, if you look behind her, he was actually going to pull it out. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It was cut, though, so.
Try and stab her in the back, right her back. Yeah.
Phone home, snarls a gremlin, disconnecting Billy's call to mom and mocking E.T. into the movie. there was also, I think we get to it here in a minute, but it was going to be so violent that they actually wanted E.T. to be there and have the gremlins rip E.T. in half or something. But
just like a plushie or something like that of him, like a little... Like a
no, it was
E.T.
the really... I don't know.
Yeah, the real E.T. would have been hilarious, but also like a toy
hilarious.
E.T. and ripping
oh,
there.
The toy E.T. would be not hilarious, the real E.T. would be hilarious.
The real E.T., that's bad.
The portrait of Mr. Deagle is actually Edward Arnold, the golden Hollywood actor who played corrupt tycoons in several Frank Capra films.
Good choice. Good choices.
The gremlin shooting at Kate instead hits a photo of a World War II era B-17, a nod to the fact that the term gremlin began as RAF slang. Mm-hmm. The biggest group of gremlins seen in the movie, the biggest group of the gremlins were seen was at the movie. When not on set, the puppets were kept in an 18-wheeler trailer nicknamed Das Box, after German U-boat thriller Das Boot.
That is the silliest thing.
The fountain was filled with liquid nitrogen, and Stripes' grisly demise, orchestrated by a puppeteer hidden inside wearing special protective gear.
Oh, wow. Even protective gear, no, that's still
not
something I
want to
do. Yeah, no way.
When Dory's towering, a gremlin is shown dancing similar to the movie Flashdance. Funny enough, the two playing here, the Gremlins, which is Mega Madness, was performed by the same man who brought us Flashdance Maniac, Michael Cimbalia. While recording vocals for the sequence inside Dory's Tavern, the voice actors include Peter Cullen and Frank Welker. They got into character by drinking Budweiser.
Any excuse to drink? I'm doing work here, guys. You guys keep doing your thing.
Oddly enough, Stripe is the only gremlin in either film to meet his demise by sunlight.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that makes now it makes sense. Yeah.
Cameos. Steven Spielberg as the man in the electric wheelchair at the science convention when Randall is on the phone. Mm-hmm. Also, Chuck Jones, the Warner Brothers animated animation legend, makes a brief on-screen cameo in the scene with Billy and Gerald trading insults. Jerry Goldsmith, the film's composer, is the man in the telephone booth at the science convention who glances at the camera. And James Mackerel, the television reporter, Landers. The scene in the department store where Stripe attacks Billy with the chainsaw was not in the original script. It was added by director Joe Dante and Zach Gilligan as a homage to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre in 1974.
A little gremlin face.
There's a lot of throwbacks and callbacks to other movies and homage.
Oh, yeah, this movie is heavily reverential, and it's really impressive.
Oh, here's what we were talking about earlier. The theater that blows up with the gremlins inside was subsequently involved in another accident with Marty McFly. Smashes into the front entrance. The theater then burned down with the rest of the buildings in the fire that happened right after the filming of Back to the Future Part 2. Mr. Hansen, the science teacher, originally died with dozens of hypodermic needles stuck in his face.
However,
by request from executive producer Steven Spielberg, the scene was reshot with just a single needle in the buttocks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it was very violent.
That's so horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
Could you imagine being a kid and seeing a guy with like several needles punched in his face? That would be traumatizing.
Throwing them in a microwave's not?
Well, no, like, that's happening to a gremlin. That's like putting needles in someone's face. Like, that's something that a kid might have to go through someday. And like the idea of like having a ton of them thrown in his face, that would traumatize a kid. Just get her needles.
The eventual fate of Pete, Corey Feldman, is never revealed in this movie. In the novel, however, he is deeply saddened by the death of Mr. Hansen and even blamed himself for it. He runs away from home and is never seen again.
Well, that's probably sad.
Gizmo watches a movie about a race car driver, which inspires his final battle with Stripe. The movie he's watching is To Please a Lady, 1950, starring none other than Clark Gable.
Clark Gable. Good actor. Great actor.
And the body count for this movie, humans, 4 that are confirmed, and the Gremlins body count, 5, and many, many other gremlins inside the movie theater.
Movie theater alone was like probably like 100, probably.
Yeah. It's Kyle. Mm-hmm. I do have a question before I ask your thoughts on this movie.
Okay. I'm up for it.
At the end of the movie where Stripe goes in and he sticks his finger in the water fountain and he starts bubbling out and gonna make a bunch of them, I have a question. How come when all the gremlins are traipsing through town in the snow, they're not producing more gremlins?
Because ice is a solid and thus doesn't need to necessarily adhere to their body.
But wasn't it snowing too?
I'm gonna say that like the gremlin's internal body temperature is so low. I'm going to scientifically explain this, break it down for you right now.
When the ice hits, in other words, you don't know.
You know, the answer is, Jimbo, it's a movie. Yeah.
I mean, I just always thought that was weird because you said, don't get them wet.
Yeah, don't get them wet. You know, but presumably, you know, like, you're still, you know, people don't consider themselves wet, they get a little snow on them. So even walking through the snow, you don't consider yourself walking through.
Yeah, but, you know, walking into work from like the parking lot that we used to work at. And you get in if it was snowing even just a little bit. By the time you got in, you were soaked.
Oh, yeah. By the time you got in, you were soaked. But still, just internal, I think this is supposed to be like, not Chicago, but even further north, where like you get that cold enough snow where like it doesn't, like you can walk through it all day. You're not going to get wet because it's just that cold. I think it's always ice. So I wouldn't
buy it, Kyle.
Okay.
So, Kyle, what do you think?
The answer was, it was filmed in California. It wasn't real snow.
There you go. Kyle, your thoughts on the movie?
Thoughts on the movie. I think this movie is remarkable. It's an achievement in practical effects and is a really great and innovating in a lot of things. Gay, like I said, we wouldn't have Grogu and the Mandalorian without Gizmo and the Gremlins, I think. Personally, I think that. And I think it's an excellent film overall. It wasn't quite... I remember absolutely adoring this film as a child and watching it more as an adult. I think it's a little more... cartoony and immature. it didn't hold up quite as well as my lofty expectations, but I still think it's a very good movie and worth watching. Probably not appropriate for little youngsters, even though it still has that PG rating, but it is definitely a strong PG-13 movie in my mind. Of like, over slapstick, kind of like over the top gory action. Like if you play a violent video game, then you can watch Gremlins. But in general, it's an excellent film. Jimbo, how do you feel about
Gremlins? I love it, man. Mm-hmm. I think the reason I like it so much is once the Gremlins come out and the stuff they do, like the flash dancing, the one that's hanging from the ceiling fan, the whole bar scene, you know, where there's the one son, they're getting drunk and he passes out and the one's like, ah, ha, ha. You know, yeah. You got that one. You got them throwing darts. You've got the Christmas carolers.
Yeah.
You got them when the one at the stoplight, like we said. And then when they're all watching Snow White and they're all going, hi, ho. You know, they're all just singing along.
Yeah, they're so
it's
good.
Great.
Yeah, yeah.
I just think it's a fun film to watch. I really enjoy it. And then you had Gizmo, man. I mean, my sister's cat's name's Gizmo. I just think that the nostalgia and all the throwbacks that it gave to other 80s movies and even before with like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I mean, it's hard to find a movie like this. Now, if they ever remade this, Kyle, do you think it could go into a horror genre with a stronger R rating? Were to be more violent?
First off, I would say, like, I would hate the idea of doing a remake of it because it would be one of those things where, like, they want to make a big franchise out of it again. They would use CG or practical effects. All those things would just make an incredibly worse film than it is, right? You know, it's a great film now, but a remake today, like, modern Hollywood can't make Gremlins in my mind. But if they did, I mean, yeah, I would say, like, I think it'd probably be a better idea to go more into the, like, make it an adult movie where, like, it's still immature and zany and cartoony, but have it be that kind of hyper-violent, almost incredibly stupidly gory, over-the-top kind of movie where it's, like, it, you know, like, just lean into the slapstick, like, gory horror of it, of, like, I'm trying to think of another film that comes to mind, but, like, just what's other films that can, like, almost, like, dumb Saw levels of just gore and violence and then lean into that and make that the Gremlins movie versus trying to make something that's like new and approachable for like a bigger audience. So that would be probably what I prefer to do. But in terms of like what they would actually do, I have no idea.
Right.
Jimbo, what do you think?
I mean, if they're going to do it, I mean, this film could have very easily went to the R-rated if they would have kept some of the more violent stuff in there, like we talked about the needles in the principal's face. They go to McDonald's and eat the people instead of the burgers. Can you see them, like,
yeah.
Can you see them, like, going down the assembly line for McDonald's and, you know, you got your two all-beef patties, except they're humans. You know, throwing them in the fryers, of, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the other thing, like, if there was ever, like, a hypothetical Gremlins 3, like, if they did the whole practical effects and made a thing to you, I would also make it, like, also, again, incredibly referential. Just reference every modern horror movie today. Like, even, like, bring in, like, Scream references or even, like, Friday
13th. I want them running around with a ghost face mask.
Exactly, ghost face mask, a hockey mask or Friday 13th, Freddy Krueger with a knife hands on a gremlin. All that stuff would be hilarious and fun and zany for me. I don't see any Hollywood studio doing it nowadays.
No.
You know, it'd have to be, like, a trauma fin or something like that now to have those kind of practical effects done to it. And so I don't think Gremlins has a future film works in my mind, but you know, it doesn't say they couldn't be done,
right?
No.
Well, there you have it. Don't forget that we do have our first live show coming up July 16th, 15th, 16th. It's one of
around
those.
There.
Yeah, I can't remember right now off the top of my head. There was a problem with to purchasing tickets online. Go to the Hillbilly Horror Stories webpage and click on events and go to the live events. I know me and Todd from Middle Aged and Creeped Out were looking at tickets. It said the sales for these tickets have ended. There was a problem. Jerry Pauly fixed it from Hillbilly Horror Stories, so now they should be up and available to get.
By the time you're hearing this podcast, everything should be resolved, and we should have some more details hashed out, so you'll be ready to go,
yeah, hopefully. They're listening. Yeah. Going to hear this next week.
Yeah, so by the time next week, they should be hopefully resolved.
You know. Yeah, no, it's already fixed.
Oh, already fixed, yeah, today. Okay, so, good.
Sure. If you want to join us on our Facebook group, the Tragedy Cinema Podcast group, we have a lot of fun on there, too. Even Kyle checks it every once in a while.
Once in a blue moon or so, you know. So, I know the interwebs.
The interwebs. Well, with that being said, I think this episode's coming to a close, and that's a wrap.
And cut.